Chapter 1.
He is drowning in Loch Swilly. The dark bubbling waters close above his head, and thick weeds tangle his feet and draw him downward. He sinks, unresisting. How peaceful it is to die. But he is cheating. It is not supposed to end like this. He has obligations. What are they? He tries to remember them, but they float somewhere in the back of his mind and he cannot hold on to them. Figures move round him in the water, pale, naked figures. Voices whisper to him, "We died for you, Red Hugh, son of Donal. Will you leave us unavenged? When Hugh succeeds Hugh, the last Hugh shall be Ordri of all Ireland, and drive out the foreigners. You are not born to die in an English prison." What do they want? They cling like cobwebs, and he tries to shake them off. Ghost-like, they fade. But then there comes another voice, one he has never heard before. "Where are the champions of Ulster? Has the hero light died in the heart of Ireland?" "An English merchantman," announced Donal Gorm MacSweeney, "coming to Loch Swilly, out of Spain, with a cargo of the best wine you've ever tasted." He glanced around the banqueting hall of Donegal Castle, as though testing the effort of his words. "And they've practically given it away to all comers," he finished dramatically. His audience gazed at him in astonishment. "In Loch Swilly?" repeated Hugh Dove O'Donnell. "And she an English vessel? What in the name of God brought her there?" He sounded put out, jealous, perhaps, that the English merchant had chosen to honour the MacSweeney rather than himself. "She is bound for Greenwich," said Donal Gorm, "but her skipper says isn't every ship coming into England these days carrying wines? He is looking for a more profitable cargo, and he after hearing that O'Donnell's the best lord of fish in Ireland, and willing to trade the same for good Spanish sack?"
"If he wanted to trade with me, why didn't he come to Donegal, or Killybegs?"
The young man's blue eyes twinkled.
"Sure didn't he think Rat Mullen was one of your castles, O'Donnell? But my father offers you the welcome of his hall, and you coming to visit him. He promises you grand entertainment, and all the wine you can carry with you."
"A generous offer," said the O'Donnell. "My sorrow that I must disappoint him, but I leave tomorrow for a meeting with the English Lord Deputy."
"Oh," O'Donnell looked disappointed. Two boys seated further down the table who had been listening intently to the conversation began to whisper to one another. The younger one dug his companion in the ribs.
"Go on, Owen, I dare you."
The older boy stood up.
"Why don't I go in your place, O'Donnell?" suggested him boldly. "Sure, and won't old Neil be sending his own men for the wine, and we not buying it first? And small joy it would be, I'm thinking, to see it going down that throat like slops into a cesspool."
Everyone laughed. They knew the drinking habits of Turlough O'Neill. Even the O'Donnell had to smile. He looked at the tall, silver-haired man sitting at his right.
"Well, O'Gallagher, is this young cub of yours to be trusted with such a mission?"
Owen MacTool O'Gallagher looked sternly at his son, then at his chieftain. He chuckled.
"Ah, let him go, O'Donnell. He has a good head on his shoulders, for all his wildness and forbay. Want to keep him out of mischief for a week or two?"
There was more laughter. Owen glanced at his companion.
"And Hugh Rowe to go with me?"
he asked hopefully. The O'Donnell shook his head.
"Not Hugh," he said. "His place is here, and I out of the country."
"But father..."
The young boy turned his eyes on the chieftain. His father looked at him sternly.
"Your place is here, son. One day, God willing, you'll succeed me. You must show the clans you're worthy to fill my place."
The boy bit his lip. "I have no wish for your place," he wanted to protest. "And I with no right to it, anyway. I may be your son, but I'm not your elected successor, your tarnisher. Your uncle, Hugh Mac Hugh Dove, holds that office." But he kept his mouth shut. O'Donnell was his chieftain as well as his father, and a chieftain's decision was not to be challenged. He turned his head, trying to hide his disappointment. Then, to his surprise, help came from a most unexpected quarter.
"Let the lad go, Hugh,"
coaxed the Lady Fionnuala O'Donnell, laying a hand on her husband's arm.
"He's not after putting his foot in the inauguration stone yet. What harm to allow him a little freedom?"
Her husband looked at her in bewilderment.
"And you're after insisting I bring him out early, that I show the clans he carries my name in absence? Then let them see it. Let him ride in your name to Rathmullen and conduct your trade with the English merchant."
The O'Donnell still looked doubtful, but Hugh knew the argument had been won. He flashed his mother a grateful grin, and she smiled at him fondly. "What an extraordinary woman she is," he thought. "So fierce, so proud, so ruthless in her... You would swear she had not a gentle bone in her body. Yet she loved him, and felt no shame to show it. She loved her husband too, and that was even stranger, for Hugh MacManus O'Donnell must surely try her patience at times. The chieftain was no longer the vigorous man she had married. He was aging, growing forgetful, and indecisive, and people knew it. They whispered. Wasn't it really the Lady Fionnuala who held the reins these days? And many of them resented that. Despite his reluctance to have himself introduced into the struggle, Hugh could understand the urgency to have it resolved. He waited patiently for his father's pronouncement, and at last the O'Donnell had made up his mind.
"Very well," he conceded. "You may go with Owen and Donal, but no unseemly carousing, mind. You are to conduct yourself in a manner befitting of the chieftain's son."
"Oh, I will, father,"
Hugh grinned, and punched Owen on the arm. His heart sang like a bird. The journey to Rathmullen, and with his two best friends for company. This adventure was going to be grand. Almost as good as the day they had let him ride on his first cattle raid. They rode into Rathmullen Castle late the following afternoon. Donal MacSweeney Fonnet came out to the gate with his wife to receive them.
"Welcome, you are at my home,"
he greeted them, as his horse boys stepped forward to take the travellers' mounts.
"And look at yourself, Hugh Rowe, out of the fosterage and dreaming, no doubt, of all the sins you're going to commit."
Hugh smiled. He had no quarrel with the Irish custom of fought. He had enjoyed his years in the household of Owen MacSweeney Doe, and the bonds he had forged with his foster family would stand him good in the years to come. Nevertheless, the end of fosterage meant the end of childhood at last, and he had looked forward to the day when he would finally be reckoned a man. Answerable to no one, and able to make his own decisions. Well, that was what he had always assumed. But now it seemed... He pulled a face.
"Chance would be a fine thing," he said, only half joking. "Sure isn't everyone still telling me what to do?"
His host laughed.
"A sad truth, lad. It's the circle of life. We eat ducks, ducks eat frogs, frogs eat worms, and worms eat us eventually. There is no man, however grand, does not have something nipping at his heels." "And what of himself, then?"
asked Owen cheekily. "Who nips at the O'Donnells, Niels?" They looked at one another and laughed simultaneously.
"Herself, isn't it?" chuckled MacSweeney. "And sure isn't that the truth for every man, and he married?"
"And you loving it?"
chided his wife, elbowing him in the ribs.
"Boast and swagger all you will, would you not be missing me sorely now, and I was not here to keep your affairs in order?"
"My sorrow, but I would," confessed MacSweeney, with a fake sadness. He winked at the boys.
"Never argue with a woman, lads. They have the tongues in them that would shrivel a fire-breathing dragon full blast."
"Ha! And I as meek as a harvest mouse?"
the Lady MacSweeney laughed heartily.
"But come away in, lads. It's tired you must be after your long ride. Shame on you, O'Donnell, and you keeping them out standing so long at your gate. Supper is preparing in the hall, and Donal Gorham shall show you to your quarters. There's share in your chamber, Donal. I thought that would be best."
Donal Gorham led them upstairs to his bedchamber. It was a large room at the top of the keep, overlooking Inch Island and the waters of Loch Swilly. Inside, all had been made ready for them. Torches blazed in sconces on the wall, fresh rushes were spread on the floor, and against one wall stood a huge feather bed piled with rugs and furs. The Lady MacSweeney knew how to look after her guests. Owen kicked off his shoes and flung himself down on the bed.
Oh, now isn't this comfortable? He said. We'll sleep like kings tonight, he grinned. And Hugh Row here, to sleep in the middle, he being the youngest, and we to poke him in the ribs, and him snoring. Ha!
Hugh snatched up a pillow and whacked his friend across the face.
Won't I remember that, O'Gallagher, shall I ever come to be the chieftain? A grand little dungeon I'll have in my castle on Loch Esk for those who insult the O'Donnell.
He fell on Owen and dragged him to the floor, and they wrestled till they were both too weak from laughter to continue. As they scrambled to their feet, Owen held up his hands in mock surrender.
Ah, you've beaten me,
he pleaded, and collapsed on the bed again.
I'm killed entirely. Just leave me here to rest in peace. But don't forget, call me when it's supper time.
And he folded his arms, crossed his chest, shut his eyes, and began to snore loudly. Hugh and Donald laughed. Hugh crossed to the window, looked out at the loch, where the English ship rode at anchor, black and bulky against the darkening sky. There was something unsettling about her beauty. Her masts and her rigging looked like the skeletons of winter trees. He shivered, without knowing why.
She's called the Matthew, said Donal Gorm, coming to stand beside him. And she's after coming all the way from Spain. Would it not be grand to sail on her, to follow the wind around the world to the harbour in Cadiz?
Hugh nodded. He put his elbows on the windowsill, and with his chin cupped in his hands, he leaned forward to have a better look. The Matthew rocked gently in the current, straining against her anchor as though eager to break free and follow the tide back to the open sea. He could see men moving about on her decks. He tried to imagine Spain, a land of legend and mystery, of blue skies and eternal sunshine, where grapevines grew in orchards like apple trees. The land of his ancestors. Thousands of years ago, Milesus and his followers had crossed the sea from Spain to settle in Ireland. He wondered what they had looked like, those ancient adventurers. The Spanish merchants he had met in his father's hall had all been dark, slim, elegant men, black-haired and dark-eyed. His father was dark too. Maybe Milesus had looked like him. But Hugh had never seen a Spaniard with red hair. Perhaps I get that from my mother's side, he thought.
Were I king of Ireland, he said dreamily, wouldn't I build myself a ship like yon and sail to Spain in her? She'd have masts of gold and sails white as the wings of swans, and I'd marry the king of Spain's daughter and carry her over the seas to Tírnanog.
Then, by God, you'd do it on your lone, said Owen's voice from behind them.
He sat up as they turned to look at him, and swung his long legs over the side of the bed.
If you've got a mind to sail off to the other world with the King of Spain's daughter, then leave me out of your plans. Sure, all I want out of Spain is a flagon of their good wine, and it's sitting on the table before me in an honest Irish hall. I have a hunger and thirst on me like the Dadga at a Formian feast? Do they never remember you have a mouth in this place?
Ah, they do, said Donal, spluttering with laughter. Though it's little enough you deserve, O'Gallagher, and you with no more poetry in you than a bull's backside.
And still chuckling, he led them downstairs to the hall. Supper was a lavish and leisurely meal, ample enough to satisfy even Owen's hunger. The MacSweeney Faunid was just famous for his hospitality. He sat Hugh on his right hand and questioned him with interest about the affairs in Donegal.
So your father is away to his meeting with the Lord Deputy Perro, he said, and the O'Neill will be there also, I hear.
And Hugh MacFerna of Dungannon, added Hugh, let you not forget him.
Ah, could anyone overlook Hugh? And what will they talk about, do you suppose?
Hugh grinned.
What do they ever talk about? The O'Neill will lay complaints against Hugh MacFerdona. Hugh MacFerdona will lay complaints against O'Neill. The Lord Deputy will take them both to task and demand again the rent and hostages he says he was promised out of Tírchono. My father will beat his breast and promise to deliver them. Then they'll all go home, and sure nobody will believe a word anyone is saying.
McSweeney laughed. You have the truth of it. I'm thinking, and would you not like to be there yourself, to hear it all with your own ears?
And Perro demanding hostages? I'd be the fool.
Ah, you would, you would. His host nodded and swallowed a big gulp of wine. But it's more than petty squabbles, I'm thinking. It's after drawing Sir John Perrault so far from the comforts of Dublin Castle, he chuckled. Perhaps he and his English queen are after hearing all the rumours.
Rumours?
The old prophecy. Isn't it on everyone's lips again, and you out of fosterage? When Hugh succeeds Hugh lawfully, lineally, and immediately, being formally and ceremoniously created according to the country's custom, the last Hugh shall be the High King of all Ireland, and drive out all the foreigners.
High King it is? Hugh spluttered into his goblet. And wouldn't O'Neill be having words to say on that score? And Hugh MacFerdonagh? And what are the southern chieftains? Is Fiach MacHugh the man to be laying his sword before a northern High King?
Or before any, if you go to that of it, chuckled McSweeney. Fiach MacHugh O'Byrne never had a mind to be ruled by anyone. But I am uneasy over this meeting. I don't trust the Lord Deputy. It is in my mind that the Saxons have their swords out for us.
But why? What are we doing to anger them?
Apart from not paying our rent, you mean?
Well, that to be sure, but faith, they wouldn't go to war with us over a few cattle. They've been our friends. Our allies against the O'Neills.
Ah, and there you come to the heart of the matter. Donal was suddenly very serious. For I suspect it's not our allies they wish to be, but our masters. They have it in their minds to govern us, Hugh, to destroy our clan system, to abolish our Irish Brehon laws, and to impose their own English customs in place.
But that would be impossible! Hugh stared at him. You can't destroy Brehon law! You might as well try to change the seasons, or order a river to run uphill! It's what makes us who we are!
True. But try telling that to Sir John Perrault. The English don't have laws. They only have decrees and edicts, and they think what is right for them must be right for everyone.
But they never bothered us before.
They've never feared us before, he frowned. It's our friendship with Hugh MacFerdonagh they distrust, and he married your sister and liked to be the next O'Neill when old Turlough drinks himself to death. He shook his head. Think of it, Hugh. O'Donnell and O'Neill, the two greatest families in the land, united for the first time in living memory. No wonder Perro is shouting for hostages. Hugh scowled. And he has the mind to betroth me to one of his daughters from his first marriage? He said, remembering a recent conversation he had not meant to overhear.
Who does?
Perro?
No, you great Amadon, Hugh MacFerdonagh.
Ah, does he now? Which daughter?
Does it make a difference?
The McSweeney chuckled. Speak for yourself, Hugh. But were it myself that were marrying off, wouldn't I want to know who it was I was going to be sharing my bed with?
But I don't want to be married off. Not till I'm, at least...
Hugh projected his mind for as far as he could imagine into the future.
Till I'm at least 30?
He finished decisively. Donal McSweeney roared with laughter.
And how old are you now? 14? 15 next month? And when, if I ever choose to marry, sure it'll be to a lassie of my own choosing.
Then you had best keep yourself out of Hugh MacFerdonagh's clutches, the McSweeney chuckled, clapping his young guest on the shoulder. Now, will I call my bards to entertain us, or do you have it in your mind to sit lecturing me all night? McSweeney's bard took his place by the fire. Hugh sat with his chin in his hands, staring into the dancing flames as he listened. The songs were old ones. They told of the Tuatha De Danann, the ancient gods of Ireland, of the Dagda, keeper of the Cauldron of Plenty, of Lug, the sun god, of the hideous red Morrigu, the hag goddess of battles. They told of the great Manannan MacLir, son of the sea and guardian of Ireland, who rode the waters in his chariot, the Wave Sweeper. And lastly, they sung of human affairs, tales of war, love, battles and bravery, and the highest deeds of legendary heroes. The notes fell from the harp like raindrops onto water, sometimes gentle, like the patter of a spring shower, sometimes loud and fierce as a winter storm. There was wind, too, in the music. It wept with the children of Lear, turned into swans by a cruel stepmother. It keened for Deirdre and the sons of Usnock. It howled round the ears of the legendary hero Fionn Mac Cumhail and his warrior Fianna as they rode in pursuit of Finn's runaway wife Grania and her lover Dermod. Hugh closed his eyes and tried to imagine the Ireland of those songs. Where had it gone to? Where were the heroes of Ulster now, when she needed them so badly? His father was old and ruled by a woman. The O'Neill was a drunkard. Even the great Hugh MacFerdinna, he whom the English called Earl of Tyrone, wore English clothes, it was said, whenever he went to Dublin, and came to heel like an obedient dog when the Lord Deputy snapped his fingers. Would the heroes of old have done such a shameful thing? King Conor Mac Nessa of Ulster, or his champion, the mighty Cú Chulainn? And Conor's adversary, the fierce, bloodthirsty Maeve of Connacht, would she have yielded her country to the old red English queen? Was I born too late? He wondered, as he made his way upstairs to bed. Has the hero light died in Ireland? He stood by the window and looked down for a moment at the sleeping loch. The waters were calm, peaceful in the moonlight, but they were dark. You couldn't see into them, and the little waves were restless. They sucked and slapped around the gunwales of the English ship, and the noise of them was like the bubbling of Daga's cauldron, as if somewhere beneath the surface of the loch, something alive was struggling to emerge.